Hey everyone, it's Mina. We are at the Right Angled office bringing you another episode of the Another Angle podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Abdullah Savia, CEO and founder. And we are going to touch upon the history of the company and a little bit about his own history and his personal background. Welcome to our podcast. We are very honored to have you. Founder, CEO, scientist, entrepreneur, healthcare professional, and you've also developed a patented technology. And on top of that, you're also a father.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about who you are. Tell us about yourself.
Let's start with the father bit. I'm a dad to two young boys, Ilyas and Adam, who with their mom are like the world to me, to be frank. And beside that, at work, you know, I'm just the guy sitting in the office, to the back of this office. And yeah, that's basically it.
So many accomplishments. Could I ask, how old are you?
I'm 33.
Are you proud of yourself?
Well, look, I think there's, proud is a big word, you know. I think people should not feel, what's the word? Complacent? Not complacent. Maybe, I don't know. You should not really feel settled. I think settlement and feeling that, you know, you've done what you wanted to do is a recipe for, you know, a decline. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot more to be done. And but as far as for the progress that we've made over the past few years in terms of business, I'm pretty content.
Yeah. That's great. We're going to start off with an icebreaker game. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the first game that we have on the podcast, and we thought you'd be the best guinea pig for this.
Let's go. Let's see.
I'll tell you the rules. You have 10 questions.
Okay.
In 60 seconds,
yep.
You must answer. No mm-hmm. repeats, no overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
I'm ready.
What year was Right Angled founded?
2015.
Who was your first hire?
Hitesh.
One word to describe Right Angled's mission?
Personalized medicine.
What's the biggest challenge you faced as a founder?
Funding in the beginning, money.
What was Right Angled's first product?
The hard DNA test.
Who was your first investor?
It's the NHS.
What's the biggest risk you've taken at Right Angled?
The biggest risk, probably starting the business where I had absolutely no clue how I'm going to build the product or even, you know, launch it.
What's one thing you wish you did sooner? Time.
I would say probably getting to the right product earlier.
What's the next big goal for Right Angled?
The next?
Big goal.
Goal. It's absolutely the delivery of treatment plus testing together.
If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be?
I would like to be remembered for the guy who was working on delivering personalized healthcare in its true sense, not as a, you know, jargon.
Mm-hmm. We are going to expand on this further in this podcast. How did he do for time?
120.
Oh,
wasn't that like big? Okay.
Fine. You didn't win the challenge, but hopefully one of our next guests might.
Okay.
So let's just jump right into Right Angled, mm-hmm. the company and the growth. I've done some research, mm-hmm. right? So over 5 years, the first 5 years, you've doubled in size. You hit a £500,000 funding cap within days.
True.
On Crowdcube. You expanded to UAE, Saudi Arabia, the USA. You secured the NHS funding that you just mentioned as well. And you had a massive, massive accomplishment in being registered with a CQC, which many pharmacy don't have.
True.
So can you tell us more about the company growth and sort of expand on these points?
I think ignorance in the first few years were a bless. You know, the fact that we didn't know what we were like getting into, didn't realize how difficult things might be, probably helped a lot. But yeah, I must say, one of the very first things that I set out to do was initially building a technology. It was a medical device, which we wanted to launch in the mass market for, being a finger prick, detecting DNA sequences. And the idea for it was to be applied on the cell-free fetal DNA, which was more towards, detecting the gender of the baby, if it's a boy or a girl, based on the Y chromosome, if it's present. And that's basically fetal DNA circulating in the maternal blood from week 5 of gestation, then it's enough to give a positive result. And that could basically be, that was the original idea. I didn't have a clue how to build the technology, but I started the business and I was like, let's get started.
And you've been successful at it as well.
No, well, ultimately we came up with a protocol that did ultimately work. And we've proved that concept. And I think that was the greatest, I must say, light bulb we've ever had in that journey when we came up with a protocol that actually made sense. So we ran it with my professor at uni, which is the time when I was actually working on that project. And then we took it to a firm in Cambridge who did that kind of lab testing to validate the protocol. And based on that, we were able to file a patent, which we got granted eventually. But again, it was quite a journey since then.
That's amazing. I want to take it a step back. You mentioned university. You went to University of Warwick,
Sure.
isn't it? So this whole journey was inspired by a colleague's mother suffering five strokes, I hear, is it?
Yeah.
Can you
So,
tell us a bit more about that?
Florian is my co-founder. She's the one that, okay, so just some context to the story. To the back of that project, which was the device, we tried to get some funding for it. We couldn't. Every VC we'd speak with, they would just tell us to go and apply for grants, which will de-risk the proposition to them. So, because they wanted to have a product that was closer to the market,
Of course.
not something to be in that clinical,
Phase.
phase yet. So grant funding coming back rejected because my writing skills weren't as adequate. I've decided that, you know what, I'm not in business to become an excellent writer. And during that time, my co-founder Florian, she asked me, let's do that genetic test called 23andMe. So we've done that 23andMe, and she found that she was a poor metabolizer to a drug called Plavix, which she straight away recognized to be the same drug that her mom was taking. But knowing that she was a poor metabolizer to the drug, that got her the idea of probably that's the reason why the drug is not working for her and why her mom is always showing gum bleeding, bruises, already gone through five strokes. So all those kind of things together, myself, being already in that genetic research, already, looking into those applications for that device. I told her, yes, probably that's the reason. Maybe you want to take that report to her cardiologist and speak with him about it. So they went to France, where she's from, and they had a chat with the cardiologist, and he said, yes, that's probably the reason, but I don't know what else to do, We have straight kind of guidelines. We go through drug A. If it doesn't work, we go to drug B. Doesn't work, go to drug C, which is the kind of like common, theme in medicine in general.
So you found the gap in the market.
So we found a gap in the market, and that was when we kind of like pivoted in a way. We said, okay, you know what? If this device is going to require a lot of money, which we don't have, let's patent it, let's file the patent for it, and let's start working on this kind of platform. And that was the time when we went to the NHS and we pitched them the idea, and they had that innovation adoption arm in the West Midlands that had some pots of a pot of money for companies that are able to bring more value originally to the NHS.
So for other founders that were, that are in the same sort of situation that you were back then, do you feel like once you got your first investment, it was, smooth sailing into
Not
securing the
at
rest?
all. Not at all. Because at the time, okay, here's the thing. I feel a lot of entrepreneurs probably like early on, they wait for the money to come before they get started.
Mm.
And that's understandable. Obviously, you need money, you need cash to be able to, you know, get moving, start hiring, start doing things. But what I find more important than this is probably just making the decision that this is what I want to do and there's no coming back from it. So before we even got the NHS funding, even after actually we knew that we would get the NHS funding, I was already in the process of getting a personal loan. And there was a company, I think it still exists till this day, called startupsloan.co.uk. It's like government-backed loans for entrepreneurs that have ideas, but it's personal. It's not business loan, which means that you have to repay it and it would still be on you to repay it back.
With interest.
With interest of 6%. So I went into that and I've got that first loan of 25K.
Mm. Did you pay it back?
I paid it back, absolutely. I paid it back, I think, I paid it back within a year. Mm. But yeah, that was what got us. That was actually the first cash injection before even the NHS funding. It was that 25K, which we had to start repaying from the next month. But that what that money allowed me to do is to start engaging with the developer who will be building the platform.
Mm.
Because that was the value proposition we went to the NHS with. Is that, yes, we have the research side with the genetic markers, with the interpretation models that I've already started doing the research on. But the platform that allows the doctors to be connected with patients so they can give them context on their reports was the actual tech side, which they really liked. So, yeah.
So there was nothing like that in the market at the time?
No.
You really must have believed in your skills and your dream to take a personal loan under your name. What was that drive informed by?
I think nothing to lose, really. Honestly, like it was, I was fresh graduate. I wasn't married, obviously. I was not planning to go back home. Mm-hmm.
So you got married after you launched your startup?
No, I only got married 4 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, we've been in business for about 10 years now.
So you've met your current wife after becoming the person you are today, or did you already know her from before?
No, we got to meet, I think towards early 2019.
Mm.
So around midway, I would say. But we got married towards the end of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the rest is history, isn't it? So you've gone on, you know, different PR activities and sort of different articles. And you've mentioned that the biggest challenge, aside from securing the funding, was the regulatory approval, specifically the CQC registration.
To be honest, that was easy.
That was easy?
That was super easy.
Is it?
That was really easy because I still remember the day when the inspectors came to inspect us. It was like in a small office, probably like the size of this, you know, set. I had literally two desks. I was on one and Hitesh, my first hire, was on the second desk. And they came in and they saw like, what are you guys registering for exactly? We're like, this is the plan. This is what we're trying to do. This is the platform. This is the whole thing. And we had our SOPs written up.
Mm-hmm.
We had our... we had a proper understanding, you know, about the regulations. That's the key thing, is like you need to put some effort in really understanding what is expected from you as a CQC registered entity. And the scope of our registration was for screening and diagnostics. So, they did that interview with me being the CQC registered manager. And I think they just like, in a way, they really... They tried to really support us, you know, in that sense. So I was like super young.
Yes, they believed in you.
They believed in us. I was like, okay, what's gonna what could go wrong, really?
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of the type of leader that you are, I've seen that you once took a test and you did the ENTJ personality test.
How did you know that? That's impressive.
And it came out that you are a strategic leader focused on change and innovation. Mm. Is it still true today?
I think so. I think the symbol of that ENTJ is the commander. I don't know, some people might find me quite firm, some people might find me quite fair, you know. I think what matters to me at the end of the day is what progress we're making and what we are able to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, if there is no progress, it means that there is something that needs to be fixed.
Mm.
So we need to innovate. We need to think outside the box. And just simply use our head, you know.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you've said in your past is that you believe that every experience, even failures, are a learning opportunity and it's super important to adapt quickly. You've also said that you respect risk takers, and Muhammad Ali is one of your inspirations.
True.
Yeah.
I had a big poster of him whilst I was at uni in my room. Yeah.
I can imagine that already.
Yeah.
So when it comes to choosing your workforce, do you apply these sort of parameters to them? You want them to be risk takers? Do you want them to be adaptable? Do you want them to kind of reflect? Do you try to find a bit of you into the people that?
Not really, to be frank. I think people are, you know, come with different backgrounds and they come with different personalities. And I feel that the most important element for a manager or a founder, you know, to have is thinking about your team as an extension of the things that you are not able to do.
Mm.
So when I look at someone, I always assess what are they really good at. If they have something that they are really great at, you know, no matter what that might be, it's already a value in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Really good science for this is someone when they're passionate about something, you know, or they are, when they talk about a subject with, you know, a smile on their face, you know, that tells you that they're dedicated to their craft, you know.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
So, let's now get back to the present times.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2025. It's been quite a while. At the moment, what is happening at Right Angled?
I think the biggest thing is, okay, look, so Right Angled obviously had two phases, right? We had that testing phase where we kind of like exploded for a short period of time. And obviously that was a big thing for us because definitely stress tested all the SOPs that we have written up.
Mm-hmm.
It got us to experience what it means to run at a scale.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely gave us that confidence of knowing that we can do it again. So when we ventured into the online pharmacy, the progress has been quite steady.
Mm-hmm.
And the growth has been quite steady. And I can see this, you know, being sustained for the long term with more services and more offerings that we can, you know, deliver
mm-hmm.
in that online pharmacy world.
Mm-hmm.
As for the future, we are already working on an app, or at least, you know, we have finished the design phase of that. We're looking to launch that with in-house tech team that will be able to develop it in-house. We also have the warehouse side, which we also just getting started with. The wholesale, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The wholesale side, which is something that I'm personally super excited about.
What makes you excited about it?
The wholesale element.
Mm-hmm. B2B.
I think it's pretty more to do with my background. My first job ever was a salesman.
Mm.
Yeah.
In what industry?
In cosmetics. I used to sell fragrances and cosmetics for at Sephora.
At Sephora?
Sephora.
Wow.
For a
so
brand
you
called
were
Givenchy.
Doing the 9-to-5 like us commoners.
Well, trust
wow.
me, more than that. It was more like 12 hours a day.
Do
and
you miss
standing.
It? Do you miss it?
I miss it. I do miss it. And I actually think that was the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
Another thing that you might know as well, when I was actually at uni, I actually did do some door-to-door selling as well. I did do that.
Do you feel like those skills are skills that you're still using today?
Yeah.
They
I do appreciate
you.
The training that I received
mm-hmm.
before I started that job, before I started those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The there's an element of, you know, knowledge you need to have, and preparedness, you mm-hmm. know, to be put in the right mindset when you go out, speak to clients, speak to people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that training that I received back in those days, you know, I think got me into that right mindset when I went out and started speaking to people.
Hmm. I'm a little curious about your upbringing.
Okay.
What was it like growing up? Did you grow up in the UK?
No, I grew up in Syria, in Damascus.
Hmm. So tell us a bit about your family.
Okay. So, so my mom is originally Syrian. My dad is Saudi. They met on a plane.
A plane going to where?
To Khartoum in Sudan.
Wow.
My mom was an air hostess.
Mm, love at first sight.
Yeah, yeah. He was a passenger. He was just sitting there. But yeah, that's how they met. And my dad used to travel a lot, so she used to travel with him. Anyways, I was born 1991. And
do you have siblings?
I do.
How many?
One brother, one sister.
One brother, one sister. Are you the... Yeah.
I'm the middle one.
You're the middle one?
Yeah.
Is that a good place to be, the middle?
Not at all. I don't know what you know about the middle one, but they have the worst part of the whole thing. Yeah, it's not a fun place to be in. Which, again, I think is another reason why it's good, you know?
You have to kind of carve your own path.
Exactly.
Are you close with your siblings?
I am.
Till this
very,
day?
Very, very close.
Are they in the UK?
No, they're both in Saudi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw them?
My brother was here last week, and my sister I saw like just over Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely. How lovely. So did your parents or your dad or your mom ever kind of pushed you to this path? What was their plan for you?
Being like in an Arab background, you know, when you have two boys, one of them needs to be a doctor and the second needs to be an engineer. It's always the case. So my path was set to become a doctor, which I actually did start back in Syria.
Wow.
I did study medicine for 2 years. And with the whole situation, I was never really into it. I'm more of a practical person. I like to do things with my own hands. And yeah, that was about my study.
What do you think your purpose in life is?
Look, I think people are humans. In my humble opinion, if you wish, are created to add value.
Mm.
You know, every person can create and add value in their own way. And I think if you can make someone's life better, whether it's through the work that you do or whether it's through, you know, the things that you can give, or I don't want to be very kind of romantic about it, but it's really about the value element that I'm very obsessed about.
Mm.
And I do believe people have, their purpose is to create value, whichever form that value might be created in, then I think they are fulfilling the potential that they have and the purpose of their being. My purpose probably might be in hopefully being able to make a change in the way that healthcare is being delivered to people.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do that by delivering it in a quick way, in a more affordable way, then this is value. And hopefully at some point in the future, we can, you know, realize that dream of truly delivering personalized healthcare.
Thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got like the busiest schedule. I hope you enjoyed being part of this, and we really appreciate your presence. And thank you guys for tuning in. We are streaming on multiple platforms, YouTube. Make sure to subscribe, like, comment, Apple Music and Spotify. See you again in our next episode launching next week.